Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs, the funny, the weird, the daft and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? Bringing along another tune from 1986 in this episode is my guest, Shaneen Salmon. Shaneen is a theatre reviewer, and you can read her articles and contributions from others on her website viewfromthecheapseat.com, where she's recently been watching what's going on in the world of live performance since the pandemic hit the industry. You can also find her on Twitter with her username @braintree_, where you'll also find information about the quizzes that she's been writing for wikiquiz.org. As usual, this is my exhortation to ask you, if you're enjoying these podcasts, to assist me by sharing the links, mentioning it to friends who you think might like it, or by rating and reviewing it on whatever podcast app you're using. Thanks very much to everyone who has helped out so far by doing any or all of those things. So now, on with the drama. So, Shaneen, have you always been a fan of soap operas?
I have peaks and troughs. So I have moments, particularly, so my main soap, as I would call it, is EastEnders, where I'll be really into it, really know what's going on. And then there'll be some absolutely ridiculous storyline and I kind of move away from it and pretend I'm not associated with it. My mum still watches it, so it means when I go home and visit her, I have to watch it. So I vaguely know what's going on. But the rest of Soapland, sort of flirtations with like Coronation Street and Hollyoaks and Home and Away kind of in the 90s, but really haven't followed what's going on and I don't really know who's in those soaps anymore.
It's strange. There's both lots of cast turnover and also lots of people who've just been there forever. So there's probably always someone in you'd recognise, isn't there, in these things? I presume that's part of the reason that they're so popular. And certainly some people who've been in them for less time than you might think tend to be the big names that everyone refers back to, some of whom we'll be coming to in this discussion, I'm sure. So is EastEnders your favourite then?
It's the one that I know most about. So even when I'm not watching it, I seem to know what's going on just instinctively. And kind of, you know, my Twitter is people who are big, you know, Letitia Dean fans. You know, that's who I seem to follow a lot. So that's why I kind of know what's happening. But I would say, yeah, if I had to choose one, if they said, look, this is the one you have to watch till the end of time, it would be EastEnders.
Is that because you're a London girl?
So, I don't know. I think it's the one that I feel the most affinity for, possibly because of its southernness. I think most of the soaps, the UK soaps that are around now, are based up in the north. And I was an extra in EastEnders a few years ago. And I did it twice. The first time, like, you can't see me at all. I'm not even sure if they kept me vaguely in. The second time, it was a storyline regarding Ian Beale. And he puts on some weight, so they send him to kind of Slimming World, but obviously they can't call it Slimming World. So they make up a soap name for this thing. And me being kind of a big girl who likes food, I was chosen as one of his kind of slimming club colleagues, so to speak. So I featured quite prominently in the background of the publicity photos, because this was like their big storyline, Ian Beale losing weight. And it was like one episode, but it was like a big deal. So there was someone pointed out to me who worked in PR who was like, oh, I know who that was. And it was me. And I featured in about two publicity images. And I sort of bring them out as a semi-joke. But yeah, that is why I have a sort of affinity to EastEnders, because they've given me paid work at points in time.
There we go. So I can advertise this podcast as the inside story then. That's what this is.
Yeah, that's a lot of hanging around. That's mainly my gossip from it. And you don't get a free meal on EastEnders because it's at Elstree and they've got a paid canteen. So most extras' jobs, there's like a proper canteen van like in Hollywood films. Not for EastEnders and not for Holby City as well.
So have you done quite a bit of extras work?
I did a bit a couple of years ago. So I was kind of temping and I was like, for years I'd wanted to do it. And I signed up with a few agencies and I've done kind of a couple of things. So I did People Just Do Nothing. I did The Mummy, where I had to be in Kensington for 4 o'clock in the morning. And there were like, felt like hundreds of us. And the scene that, like, if you watch the film back, you're like, you don't even see any of those people. It's like the money that gets wasted effectively. Because all of those people are on about, it's not a huge amount of money, it's sort of like 100 quid a day, roughly around that mark. So if you get a few days work, great. If you get kind of one day, you're just there really to get the food, as I was, to just see what's happening in the canteen van. And yeah, and sort of, yeah, meet people. And there's some people who are pros, like that is, I mean, obviously before COVID happened, it was a big industry. Less so now. But yeah, I quite enjoyed it. But the days, and it's very last minute. If you're freelance, it's perfect. Yeah. If you're not doing anything tomorrow, then you'll say, right, I'm not doing anything tomorrow. Give me 100 quid. I'll be where you want me to be. But I've subsequently then ended up in kind of permanent 9-to-5 jobs. And it's very hard to just kind of go, right, sorry, I'm not coming in tomorrow because I'm going to be on EastEnders, whatever. So, but yeah, I would recommend it, even if it's just kind of a bucket list, you can tick it off and say that you're an extra on something.
Yeah, well, that seemed very interesting, that. And so I think people have probably guessed that something soap opera themed is the topic of this episode anyway. So do you want to tell everyone what the piece of music is you've brought along to the Head Ballet today?
It is Anyone Can Fall in Love by Anita Dobson.
So we're back to 1986, which is fast becoming a favourite year for songs on this podcast. So I'll have to do an assessment after I've finished this first season and see how many from 1986. Is 1986 the year of what I'm calling novelty records? But Anyone Can Fall in Love by Anita Dobson and the Simon May Orchestra. Very important, that bit there, which was released on BBC Records and Tapes with the catalogue number RESL191. Thanks to Tim Worthington and his fantastic book for all the information on that. And several other things in this we'll probably get onto as well. And yeah, it's a pretty big hit, you know, gets to number 4 in the charts. So what is it about this song then? Because I think this is our lead off to a bigger discussion about soap opera stars becoming performers, pop stars, whatever you want to call them. So tell me about Anyone Can Fall in Love. What is it?
It is... It's basically the EastEnders theme, which, if anyone heard my Looks Unfamiliar episode, we'll realise I'm slightly obsessed by the EastEnders theme in its various forms. But this, it's ultimately, it's a sort of, yeah, it's lyrics to the EastEnders theme, which is written by Simon May. It's also produced by Brian May. I don't think they're any relation.
No, I don't believe so.
But obviously Anita Dobson is married to Brian May, but she wasn't at this point. I think they were partners, but they weren't legally.
They got married until something like the year 2000 or something.
Yeah, so. It was like really late. They were together a long time. So yeah, this seems to me, it's a catalyst for what becomes, which is soap stars, known primarily for playing a character in a particular thing. So Anita Dobson is not just an actress. She is Angie Watts. Singing Anyone Can Fall in Love to the EastEnders theme and then releasing it as a record. And it seems to trigger off a lot of these very specific EastEnders characters releasing songs kind of as their characters, but also not. And then ultimately a career pathway for actors when they leave the soap and they become popular. There's this era of what can you do next? And I think being in a soap really limits you. People don't, at that point, you know, we're talking 80s, 90s, nobody wants to put you in films. Nobody wants to give you your own series. So what do? You release a record. And that seems to be, as I said, particularly in EastEnders, that seems to be the route to go down. It seems as if you sign a contract when you say, okay, you're going to be here for 5 years. And then once that's done, you can go off and release an album.
Yeah, and I think there's possibly, I mean, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. There's still a bit of snobbishness about people when it's someone who's come from TV to become a pop star, thinking that they're perhaps not legitimate in the way that someone who's in a band or something like that gets in the charts. Do you think there's some of that? Because obviously I think a lot of these soap star singles become the sort of butt of jokes, really.
Yeah, I think there's definitely this kind of air of, well, would you have got that record deal if you weren't on the soap? And the chances are they probably wouldn't. But I don't think it's that much of a leap for these actors to also be able to sing as well. So particularly in EastEnders, they come from kind of the Italia Conti, the Sylvia Young school, and particularly the young ones. So they're not just going to teach them drama. They're not going to be doing like Chekhov every week. they're going to be doing something interesting. And for most young people, that's musical theatre.
Yeah.
So it links up in that way. But I agree with you. I can't think, I mean, EastEnders in particular has really struggled to either have people who are long-term outside success, either in films and continuing in acting, or someone who has a really long pop career.
Yeah.
After coming out of EastEnders. It is possible in soaps, but it hasn't been the case in EastEnders at all. Not anyone that I can, I mean, I'm happy to be proved wrong, but I can't think of anyone who has kind of gone, right, this is the pathway, I'm on music now. So it does seem to be, particularly in British soaps, a bit of a curse if you become a pop star after being in the soap for a relatively long time.
I think you may have hit on something there, because obviously the real successes in music have come from our friends in Australia, who seem to have mastered the art of becoming famous in their own sort of field in film and TV, like particularly the Australian soaps, and then actually having a really big, international in some cases, pop career.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious one is obviously Kylie Minogue, who's recently released a wine. You know, she's doing everything. She's got her songs. She still pops back to acting occasionally. And yeah, now she's got like her vineyard in France that she's kind of releasing some very basic wines from. So it's really odd for an Australian to be releasing French wines, in my opinion. But anyway. But yeah, you have that thing, and they're quite respected. Like Natalie Imbruglia had a, I think, really good, she's not really long term, but she came out with these kind of original songs, and I think people saw her more now as a musician than they do from her time in Neighbours.
Yeah.
So it is possible. I just don't know why it's evaded British soap stars. And I think you're right. I think it's purely snobbery on the audience's part.
One other thing I think that might contribute to it as well, though, particularly with these things we're talking about, and especially Anyone Can Fall in Love is a good example of this, is we've mentioned Simon May as the writer of these, of that song. And he does, obviously, the theme, he writes, turns this into the song. And he does this with a bunch of other people we'll talk about as well. But Simon May himself is a guy who's had a sort of pop career, but is more or less a musicals and TV themes composer rather than a pop songwriter.
Mm.
Maybe it's that sort of musicals sound that makes these things sort of set apart from everything else that's in the charts at the time, because I've listened to Anyone Can Fall in Love more times today than I probably have in the rest of my life deliberately anyway. And it really could be a song from a West End musical. With its key changes and its sort of drama in it when it happens. What do you think? Do you think that's possibly part of the issue?
Yeah, I was just reading, which I completely missed. So the lyricist was Don Black, who was, I think,
Yes. Probably
released a memoir recently, but he was kind of in the news a lot a couple of months ago. And he is a musicals man, ultimately. So the lyrics are very musical. The theme is very kind of, yeah, it's, you can imagine it kind of not at the end of a musical, but either leading to the end of a first half, like Defying Gravity in Wicked, or kind of like the key song from the one that everyone likes when they come out of the musical. That's the one that I remember. That's the vibe Anyone Can Fall in Love gives. And yeah, I do think the history that EastEnders particularly has, it does in its casting goes for a lot of musical theatre people. And it makes sense why Simon May felt that Anita Dobson, who has gone on to do lots of musical theatre subsequently, was the perfect vocalist for this kind of thing. And it's very 1986 as a song. It's just kind of,
yeah,
it feels like they want it to be in Chess or something, but it's not quite good enough for Chess, so they just have it at the end of an episode of EastEnders and then release it as a single or something.
Yeah, I mean, there is a particular production sound on a lot of these records that we'll mention that is, yeah, it does set them apart from perhaps everything else that was going on in the pop charts, even when we get to like the stuff with Letitia Dean, which is a bit more geared towards, you know, I don't want to say urban sounding stuff, but I suppose it is really like there's something out of time. Something out of time. That's something else completely, isn't it? There's something out of nothing backed with Times Square. You see, that's why I was reading it on my notes. Something out of nothing. It seems to be more directly trying to be a chart pop thing of the period that it comes out in, compared to some of these other ones. Do you know much about Simon May?
I don't know. I should have really looked him up more. But I know he seems to have a particular obsession with this theme. He also did the theme to Howard's Way. Is that right?
He certainly did, yes.
So there's another Marty Webb recorded the theme to Howard's Way. And then she also covered Anyone Can Fall in Love on her album. So it's definitely, it seems like even though he's not naturally a lyricist himself, he seems to write these songs with the idea that they could have lyrics. That's my feeling, that he's very much like, these are proper songs as far as he's concerned. These are not just instrumental pieces.
Yeah, he does write in a melodic style rather than in a sort of ambient style, let's say, for want of a better word. So yeah, it does feel like they, even before they have lyrics, it feels like they could have lyrics or should have lyrics. And yeah, Always There is the single he does with Marty Webb for the Howard's Way theme. But yeah, so I have a personal story about Simon May, which that makes it sound more dramatic than it is, actually.
What did he do? Yeah.
What did he do to me? No, so he wrote a musical called Smike, which was based on Nicholas Nickleby.
Oh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, it sounds intriguing.
Yeah, well, it's one that a lot of schools do. And I believe there was even a BBC TV adaptation of it at one point. I think he did it in the 70s. But in the early 90s, my school started doing these quite big musical numbers, which was great because I was in, you know, very heavily involved in the music department. And although I wasn't in the cast or the orchestra for this one, I did the sound for it, for our production of Smike. And it's very catchy. It's very Simon May. I can remember most of the songs now. It lodges in your head, that sort of thing. But about the time that we were putting that on in our school, Simon May was doing a tour. So he was going on tour around theatres across the country to do his A Night Away from TV tour. Basically, with him doing all his few pop songs he's done himself, the hits he's had with other people and doing that sort of stuff. And he came to our school because he was getting school choirs involved. So I've got first-hand Simon May experience of him being in there when he was sort of going through some of the numbers he was going to do with us in Birmingham Town Hall, it ended up being, where we performed with him. And I was in the choir for that, so I was there. And it's an interesting thing because this is 1994, he was such a pro. He was so sort of smooth. He was, you know, he was proper jacket over the shoulder type smooth. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. It's just, he was quite clearly a TV professional, you know, or an industry professional. He had one of the first mobile phones I've ever seen, you know.
Oh, wow.
Mobile phones were pretty big even in 1994, but he had one of these really tiny ones, you know, when they were making them smaller and smaller rather than bigger and bigger like they are now. And it's like, wow, what's that piece of thing? It's like something out of the future, that. But yeah, so we ended up going up to this, you know, sit in the choir stalls in Birmingham Town Hall while he did his show to a nearly empty theatre. So, and the thing was, he did loads of publicity. He was on TV quite a lot of the time. But I think the problem is, while he may have had all these hits with other people and a couple himself, he's a TV composer and people don't really know who they are.
No, it's not that you're going to see John Williams or something. You know,
yeah,
like he's not quite up there in that kind of knowledge, really. So, yeah, I'm kind of marketing as the man who did the EastEnders and Howard's Way theme is going to get some people, but not going to pack out any house.
No, and quite a lot of the dates on that tour, I believe, were cancelled, which is a little bit of tragic. But I do remember how the show opened, because it opened with this little lad, some little actor or someone from one of the schools, sat at a piano on the stage pretending to do his piano scales and getting them wrong. It was going da-da-da-da, da-da-da, and this voiceover starts, and it's Simon May saying something I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was doing this voiceover about when I was a boy and I used to have to practice my scales, and I wondered why I had to do that. But it turns out that if you practice, you never know where it might lead, at which point the scale on the piano the boy plays goes da 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 dun dun, as smooth as you like into the EastEnders theme.
Oh, you have to open with that.
So I have a very, very strong memory of my time with Simon May.
That's great. Yeah, I've not been so fortunate, but it's a classic theme. I'm not surprised he thought he could get a whole tour out of just, I wrote the EastEnders theme. That's what people will come and see performed live, especially as this is kind of a year after his other attempt at adding lyrics to the EastEnders, to the jazzy EastEnders theme, as I referred to it, which did not go down well. So maybe he was kind of just keeping it back to basics. And going from there.
Indeed. It was an interesting time. But I mean, I will say one thing. It did sort of open my eyes to the nature of that being a job that you can do. You know, it is. So those people who were interested would have got something out of it. And he's made a career out of it, even if he didn't sell out every day on that tour. Let's put it that way. But let's move on. I think we've got, Anyone Can Fall in Love, which is, it's fine. It's all right. It's got a pretty ludicrous guitar solo in it, which is quite nice. But where do we move on from there? Because, you know what, I don't even think that's the first from EastEnders. There's been some other music from EastEnders there. But if we move forward from there, who else have we got from EastEnders turning into a pop star?
Yeah, so in the same year, Nick Berry, who played Simon Wixie Wix, releases Every Loser Wins, which is also written and produced by Simon May, along with some other people. But it is, as in my notes, where I was really shocked. Yeah, Every Loser Wins was number one for 3 weeks in 1986, which seems incredible because no one, like, you go on Spotify or whatever, it's just not, no one's highlight of 1986 includes Every Loser Wins. It's just, it's not forgotten, but it's not. 3 weeks in 1986 is a long time to be at number one. Yeah, I mean, impossible now, but like then it's a significant amount of time. And I question how much of it is young women fancying Nick Berry, which who can blame them? Yeah. And how much of it is people just, it felt like the kind of, who said that kind of musical song that people kind of wanted in the mid 80s.
It's an interesting one. I think personally, I prefer Every Loser Wins to Anyone Can Fall in Love. I don't know about you.
I think, I can see. I think Nick Berry to me is kind of, I mean, Anita's fine, but I think her voice is not as strong for the, you want a big voice, and Anita doesn't really quite have that. It feels like she's quite tired doing Anyone Can Fall in Love. Like she's been held at gunpoint and she's got to do this song. And whereas, Nick Berry suits the image of a pop star a lot more than Anita.
Partly
age, but partly because I think he's not in the shadow of Brian May producing it. You know, if your partner's been in Queen, you're probably not that bothered about becoming a pop star. You know, you're not Freddie Mercury. You will just move on and carry on playing Andy Watts.
Yeah. So am I right in thinking that Every Loser Wins actually appears in EastEnders as a in-world piece of music?
Yes. So in one episode, he is, after leaving the band, which is the group that all the young people were part of, musical group all the young people were part of, he is sat at a piano in the Queen Vic playing it. So the implication is he's composed this himself.
Yeah.
And then he plays it to Michelle Fowler and Lofty, and they record it on cassette, which is very quaint. And then Michelle and Lofty tell him it's their song. And then Lofty listens to it when she jilts him at the wedding. It's like a whole week of just Every Loser Wins.
Yeah, nice idea, having original music. I think bands could be more trouble than they're worth. A solo performer could really bring in the custom.
Yeah, well, right now I've got more need of him behind this bar.
You're not actually crying over that crap, are you? It was our song. Kick his keyboards in.
What's he ever done to you?
Spewing out that filth.
Yeah, there's another episode where Ian Beale requests it, and then Michelle hears it and starts crying. Mary the punk calls it sentimental garbage. And I don't know who this character, Harry Reynolds apparently calls it music to vomit to, causing a fight between Simon and Harry. And at that point, it's never mentioned again, presumably. And then I'm not quite sure at what point in the process. So you have this whole storyline around the song. So great publicity. And then at some point the song gets released and it's number one for 3 weeks. But yeah, it's very much, you know, it's released as Nick Berry. But actually, is it Nick Berry or is it Simon Wicks releasing the song? It's very blurred. Yeah. It's very strange. And I don't know. I feel like with advertising laws now, the BBC would really struggle to do something like that in EastEnders, to have this kind of whole original composition and then release it like a week later on Spotify or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to, as I made my notes for this, I was trying to put together, I suppose, what I'd call a typology of the types of things that come out of soap operas. So we've just got two key examples there. So we've got the theme tune with lyrics is one type of thing. We've also mentioned the theme tune just being released itself because people are obsessed with the show, so they send, you know, do the theme. And we've also talked about a song featured in the show, but it's where it's sung by the character, but it's released by the actor. So there's sort of three types. Then, of course, you've got the songs by the actor after they've sort of established themselves as a pop singer or whatever. So they're remote from the show, unconnected. And then you've got songs that are heard in the show, but aren't specifically done by anyone in the show, which is like, I believe there was something called Killing Time by an artist called Barry Blood, which got a BBC singles release because it was heard in the background of an episode of EastEnders.
Oh, wow. And people were like pre-Shazam going, what is that song? And then it getting released. Many times I tried to reach out and hold you, but you were only killing time. You should have seen me.
But given I doubt many people when that came out, that Barry Blood tune in 1985, people wouldn't have been taping EastEnders or watching it back or rewinding going, what was that? So it must have had a big impact on, like, it's, I don't know, shown twice or whatever it is in a week,
yeah,
or something. I don't know.
Well, that was it, because you would have had the main showing and then you would have had the omnibus, yeah, at that point. So unless people were kind of, were people watching the omnibus just to hear that song again and wonder where it was? I mean, people used to write in about that kind of stuff, but yeah, I don't know. I've always had access to the internet, really. So in my, not always, but most of my life I've had access to the internet, so I've never felt the need to demand BBC Records release a song heard in the background in the Queen Vic.
Yeah, well, clearly it happened here anyway. So, yeah. No, I quite like Every Loser Wins. I don't know whether I've got a soft spot for it because it was in one of my complete keyboard player books when I was learning to play electronic keyboard. So I know it quite well from that, you know, one finger and chords in the other side. But yeah, it's, I think you're right about Nick Berry sort of makes the, he looks more like a pop star of the period, doesn't he? And it's, so I think that's where he's successful in that sense.
Yeah, and he also went on obviously to do the theme tune when he, so he leaves EastEnders and he goes on to do Heartbeat, and he released that as well. Well, did he release it or did he just sing it? I'm not sure if it was released commercially, but he definitely sings the theme to
Heartbeat.
Well,
it was ITV, wasn't it? So they'll have released that.
They would have made money out of him, yeah. So yeah, there is a thing. But again, I don't think, like, to me, Nick Berry doesn't have this huge pop career, despite having that kind of, which makes me wonder, did he enjoy it? Did anyone think there was a long-term future in it? Because he's got a nice enough voice.
Yeah, it's all
right. It's just really weird that he was like, yeah, I'll do that one, Every Loser Wins, and the Heartbeat theme. And then I don't think he does anything else. I don't think he does musical theatre.
Yeah. So we should also, I mentioned briefly before, Letitia Dean and Paul Medford put out a single called Something Out of Nothing, which was quite different to those other ones. And that got to number 12 in 1986. We're gonna make something out of nothing. We're gonna turn. So 1986 is the year of throw everything out from EastEnders at the charts and see what happens. And most of it sticks for a little bit, you know, so
Yeah. Everything is, if it doesn't make the top 10, it's at least in the top 20. You know, it does pretty well. And again, you know, not really much comes of it. So they kind of release that one song. Again, I think under their real name. So it's not even under the band, which would have made more sense to kind of have everyone, all the young people in EastEnders doing this song. They release it. And presumably, I don't think they wrote it. That would be like, they're going to lose money if they do it under their soap name. But I think a lot of it is you can't understandably release. So for example, yeah, you couldn't say this is by Simon Wicks, partly because of Leslie Grantham. So Leslie Grantham having murdered someone in real life,
yes,
is not allowed to then associate as Den Watts outside of the EastEnders bubble. And that kind of, I'm guessing, applies to everyone. So you can't portray yourself as a character when you are this real life person. So you get this kind of very blurred line of, is it Letitia Dean and Paul Medford or is it Sharon Watts? And I can't remember Paul Medford's character's name now. But it's that thing when actually what people probably associate with them is with the character name rather than their real life name.
Definitely people's mind blurs on these things, and I think that's always been one of the problems of show business. No matter how you're presented to an audience, whether you're a pop star or a soap star or whatever you are, a film star, people tend to imprint the presentation of you rather than the reality of you. So, which must be why several of them go completely bonkers. But yeah. So shall we step away from Albert Square then, and we've got to have some examples from other other soap operas. So what else have we got then? Who else has stood up to the microphone to make a name for themselves?
So there was one that kind of gets forgotten now, but Coronation Street, which doesn't have a huge history of soap star to pop star. So there's obviously Adam Rickett, who does I Breathe Again. But the one I find particularly quite odd, just like I said, is mainly forgotten about. Matthew Marsden did a cover of She's Gone, but it featured Destiny's Child. Now, Destiny's Child at this point were nobody. Like, Matthew Marsden was the name. And Matthew Marsden, again, who he, like, I can't remember his character's name. Yeah. Because he was sort of like, he was like a sexy mechanic because it was Coronation Street and that's like the rule. He worked in the mechanics bit. So, apparently he was in Emmerdale before, but I remember him, yes, he was Chris Collins on Coronation Street, and then he leaves, does this cover of Hall & Oates as She's Gone, and on the label are Destiny's Child providing backing vocals. And because nobody really like knows him, nobody knows them, it only reaches number 24. And you're like, can you imagine a Beyonce song now only reaching number 24? Yeah. So, and this is only 98, so this is pretty early in like Destiny's Child terms, but that's my first exposure to Destiny's Child as being like backing singers for this man who was vaguely attractive on a soap. Like, he wasn't even the most attractive one. And he releases quite a few singles, but yeah, I still find it fascinating. No one talks about it. Like, you never hear Beyonce doing a shout out to him.
No.
She never, he's not featured on Lemonade. He's none of that. The relationship is gone. So just follow your heart and we'll tell you what to do. Everybody's high on consolation. Everybody's trying to tell me what is right for me. And yeah, it doesn't do that well. And his voice is not, again, this is kind of all of the soap stars, with, you know, there are odd exceptions. But none of them have exceptional voices. None of them have kind of gone into acting for a bit. It's all people who can vaguely sing, vaguely pleasant, and we'll have them release, you know, a single or an album because we really like them. And then another soap that kind of, again, doesn't release that many pop stars, which is quite surprising, is Hollyoaks. So Hollyoaks, the only person, as far as I'm aware, who has released a single from Hollyoaks, considering how many young people are in it, was Will Miller in 1998 with another cover. So they never give them original songs. It's always cover songs.
Yeah.
So if someone's making money out of these people, it's not any of these pop stars.
Yeah, some music publishers doing well, I think, out of this, rather than a new songwriter or something like that. It's a music publisher somewhere.
But yeah, Will Mellor's the only one from Hollyoaks that ever. And you'd think, again, like, I think it's quite, I think it did quite well. It got to number five, his cover of When I Need You by Lea Sayer. But again, it's really, I find there are certain sites that I would just assume, yeah, if you left Hollyoaks, you're probably going to leave Hollyoaks when you're still in your like early to mid-20s, because you've started maybe in your late teens. That's still going to be quite an attractive pathway, and it just wasn't. And I think part of me wonders if there is that kind of north-south divide. So the London-based soap stars do great because they're already in London and that's where the industry is. But if you're kind of, is it, do they film Hollyoaks in Liverpool? Have I got that wrong? I know it's set in Chester.
Not far away. Yeah. I know quite a lot of people who've worked on it.
Yes. The main employer, I think. And same with Brookside, which was definitely Liverpool. Like, there's two. There's Jennifer Ellison and Claire Sweeney,
yeah,
who are both still names, but not huge pop stars, you know. So I kind of wonder what happened, why it was so easy, one, for kind of London-based soap stars to get the attention, and two, why Australian soap stars seemingly could just kind of come off the plane at Heathrow and end up with a record deal in London, because most of the Australian ones, the collaboration seemed to be with British producers rather than Australian ones.
Yeah, it is interesting. You're absolutely right. They sort of walk off a plane and become superstars, don't they? And even the ones that don't break America, which I don't think many of them do, they get such a big boost to their career from the British pop industry that they become, you know, legends to generations of people. Which is interesting. Although what I will do at this point is I will pick up on something about Coronation Street, just because I found out a couple of very early releases that I think are worth mentioning. To prove that this isn't a new phenomenon anyway, I did find out that Coronation Street, which begins in 1960, and obviously one of the key characters at the beginning was Elsie Tanner, played by Pat Phoenix. That's right, isn't it? I'm getting those names
right.
Yes,
yeah.
So Pat Phoenix puts out a single called The Rover's Chorus
in
1962, which is a sort of half a sort of sing-song around a piano, a pub piano type thing, but is also like just ambient noise of her being in the bar in the Rovers, having to deal with all the people around her.
Take my lips, take my arms, they're yours forever. They belong with my love, just to you.
Oh, that's smashing.
How many of you had? Will you belt
about
on?
25, why?
Yeah, well, it's time you went off.
Hey, give us a kiss before I go down.
Shut up. Look, this is serious singing and you're spoiling my soul.
Tell something, you're flat.
What, me flat, not on your belly.
And the flip side of that is the Coronation Street theme, but with her doing a monologue over it about, you know, it's a very bleak thing about life in Manchester and what it's like living on Coronation Street and the rain coming down and all this.
Oh.
And it's such a strange thing to have this conceptual in-world but not quite Rover's Chorus on one side, because again, it's Pat Phoenix is the name on it, not Elsie Tanner.
Yeah.
And then this monologue on the other side, which is very bleak. And then a year later than that, obviously 1963, we've got the beat boom, especially the northern music beat boom, you know, with the Beatles and Friends. You've got a character in Coronation Street called Walter Potts, who somebody discovers, I'm doing air quotes there, discovers, and makes him into a pop star called Brett Falcon, who releases a song called Not Too Little, Not Too Much, which is then released by the actor that plays Walter Potts, Brett Falcon.
Oh, this is confusing.
I know, exactly.
Like, there's three names now.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
Thought the two names was too much, but... Yeah, that's a lot going on. Yeah, I just want to imagine looking for it in a record store and you've got these two names, but you've got every name except the actors.
Yeah, I've got it's the single by Walter Potts. No, I haven't got anything like that. Well, try Brett Falcon then. It turns out it's Chris Sanford. So, but yeah, that comes out in 1963, a nice little sort of beat number, and it gets to number 17 in the UK charts and features Led Zeppelin's Jimmy Page on lead guitar on it, because he was on quite a lot of those, you know, session work on those things like that.
Hey, not too little, not too much. You've got a perfect love and touch. Not too little, not too much. All I want to feel is your love and touch.
So there's some very early examples of it there as well. So it has happened up here in the north. And I think you're going to tell us all about a really special something that has happened up in the north from what I still think of as Emmerdale Farm in my head, because that was probably the last time I ever saw an episode. It was called Emmerdale Farm. But yeah. Go on, tell us about Emmerdale.
I can't remember if it was on a program or I just saw it somewhere. But they are described as a English country rock trio of the 1990s. So they were called the Woolpackers.
Mm.
And in an attempt to cash in on the popularity of line dancing at the time, you've got Steve Halliwell, Billy Harmon, and Alan Lewis. Alan Lewis is best known for being in one of the husbands in Birds of a Feather. I think there's different, they come and go, kind of. One of the ones that were, the one married to, Tracy. So yeah. That's probably, to me, that's his most famous one. But he was also in Emmerdale. And kind of in 96 and 97, they released these two line dancing albums that don't do very well. But it's the only example. It's not even on kind of my researching. There's not many Emmerdale people at all who I think go on to become pop stars. I don't know if it's because the makeup of Emmerdale. Emmerdale is not a young, sexy soap, really. You know, I don't know if that actually that many young people even watch Emmerdale. It's very much like The Archers on TV in my mind. That's what I associate.
Oh, I know a lot of people love it. People writing to you.
I know, going, how dare you? But it's that's the vibe I get from Emmerdale. Like, occasionally they'll put in some young, attractive people, but not too many, because actually what you want is a kind of nice, rural soap. But yeah, it was such cashing in on what? Because 96, cashing in on line dancing, I was reading this, I was thinking, well, surely they mean like 94 this came out. And they're about 2 or 3 years late on the line dancing thing.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why it took them so long to work out that they should probably, you know, do a release. But yeah, they're counted as kind of a spin-off, an other from Emmerdale. I don't even know what the characters' names were, but presumably these men were quite happy. Oh, sorry. So one of them's Zach Dingle. The other one's known as Terry Woods, which I don't remember at all. And then Alan Lewis played Vic Windsor. In Emmerdale. So, kind of semi-biggish characters, I suppose, in the mid-90s, but not enough. The record-buying public were probably not majorly into this sort of music.
Well, I know I remember very clearly Hillbilly Rock, Hillbilly Roll coming out, because it got up to number 5 in the charts and it was on everything, presumably because of the availability of these people to actually come and mime it on all the different shows.
Yeah.
So I seem to remember it being everywhere for a little while. But then, like you say, we'd had about 2 or 3 years of line dance fever going on in the charts, because you'd had like Billy Ray Cyrus with Achy Breaky Heart, and then you'd had stuff like everyone's favorite terrifying Swedish line dance things, the Rednecks with
yes.
Cotton Eye Joe and a series of other awful things.
That's basically when it peaked in my mind. You kind of get the Rednecks and Cotton Eye Joe, and then everyone goes, no, we're done with line dancing or anything vaguely country sounding now. And then everyone moves on. And then, yeah, a couple of years later, the Woolpackers go, me too, we'll do some line dancing. And no one's, yeah, everyone's moved on by that point.
Well, you say everyone's moved on, but the Rednecks were still releasing singles in 2018, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they've taken a change of direction at that point.
Yeah, I'll have a look on Spotify later and see what kind of stuff they were releasing in 2018.
I don't want to be held responsible for what that does to your brain. Hillbilly Rock, Hillbilly Roll was quite a big one, and they had a follow-up to that which only got to number 25, so there was a steep drop off in their success as it would be a novelty, definitely, I would have thought. How about some honorable mentions then? And I think we can't finish without mentioning everyone's favorite soldier heartthrobs, can we?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, Robson and Jerome are an example of it doing incredibly well. Simon Cowell produced, I believe.
Yeah.
But what gets forgotten, and I only came across this again, it was like on a Channel 5 look at back at, I think, 1995. Denise Welsh, who was in Soldier Soldier, also released a single, I believe.
Oh, yes.
Maybe not a whole album, but definitely released a single. And I cannot, it's not even on her, I don't think she even talks about it on her Wikipedia. She's maybe had that deleted from the thing. But there was a whole music video, and in the music video features her son, who's now in, is it the 1975, his band?
Oh, I'll take your word for it.
it's young people music.
Yeah. I'm too busy listening to Bernard Cribbins.
But yeah, she releases a cover, and I can't remember for the life of me. I should have done more research, but she releases a song. It's if you,
you
found
don't have
it,
to say you love me.
Yes,
backed with Cry Me a River. So another couple of classic,
just throw out some covers, but doesn't quite hit the heights of kind of Robson and Jerome. I think partly just I mean, were people buying it for Robson Jerome? Were people buying it for the Soldier characters? It's that weird blurring of, you know, what are you buying this for? Do you just like the song? So yeah, and I think that her foray into pop music gets forgotten. I think she's got quite a pleasant voice, but just didn't pique any interest from anybody because we were all distracted by lovely Robson and Jerome. So they
release three singles, all of which get to number one. But again, they're all covers of classic 1950s/60s tunes. And so they've clearly got some sort of target market they've worked on very carefully there, which is interesting, because Unchained Melody was their first big hit, and that was the one I think that's in the show Soldier. In fact, I remember watching that when it went out with my parents, because it was one we'd sit around and watch together. But the others, I think, are disconnected from Soldier. They didn't sort of enforce What Becomes of the Brokenhearted into the show, I don't think, anyway. I mean, three number ones, whichever way you slice it, it's not bad on your CV, is it?
It's not. I'm just reading the Scandal, which is a session singer claimed it's not their voice. Des Dyer said that he was the voice on the record, and
Stock Aitken
Waterman. said no, that's not true. But then in 2008, Stock admitted that the vocals were assisted by session singers. Des assisted with Jerome's part, because their voices were similar, and then the Robson part was done by a totally different singer, and the high notes were a totally different guy. But he claims that both Robson and Jerome did contribute vocals. So I wonder if I'm kind of at what point did the idea of soap stars becoming pop stars get killed off? And I'm wondering if this contributed, you know, how many, when they were kind of releasing these records and these covers, were actually sung by the people. I'm guessing this is kind of the main example of it, really, because obviously neither of them go on really to do much musically. They kind of have great acting careers now. I think both of them are working regularly, which is all you can ask for when you're an actor. But yeah, it's interesting how desperate were the music industry at that time to have these names, these ready-made names, that they were willing to kind of do a mini Vanilli type of situation.
Yeah.
Just to make a few quid, as you said, for the publishers.
Well, that's very interesting. That's a bit of controversy. I almost feel like we should have the EastEnders drums coming in there with this, cliffhanger.
Just my mouth agape at the accusations, yeah. And Simon Cowell just said, here's some money, be quiet now, to the man who made the accusations. So, and I mean, nice work. You get some singing, you get paid for the singing, and you get paid to keep quiet that you sang on this song. But, yeah.
Allegedly, yeah.
Because I don't think it's been in a court of law yet.
No. Well, that's like we don't get dragged in there for spreading these
revealing
rumors.
The truth.
Yeah. But I think, like you say, this might be one of the contributing factors to as we discussed before we started recording, you know, when was the last time we had a proper homegrown UK soap star who became a pop star? And I certainly can't bring one to mind for, a long time.
And genuinely, the only one that I can think of that did well most recently was Martine McCutcheon. And there's probably ones that were later than that. But even that was 1999 with Perfect Moment. The last one that I can think of. That was someone who said, right, I'm leaving this soap. I've got a record deal now. Into Neighbours, I think the only ones I could think of were kind of Holly Valance and Delta Goodrum.
Yeah.
But after that, I don't know what happens to a lot. You have a lot of young actors, particularly EastEnders had a big exodus of young actors leave. And as far as I know, none of them have gone on to be like, oh, I'm releasing a record now. But I admittedly, you know, I'm in my early 30s. I don't really keep up with what's in the charts anymore. No. So maybe they're having a great time. Maybe they are really successful. But on the lists I found, it's just not the route to go down. And I think partly the music industry has changed a lot. It's not the guaranteed you'll get at least the top 40. Because already you were seeing the seeds of doubt of buyers. So Sean Maguire, who was very popular in EastEnders, album only got into the top 75, and none of his singles, he released about 8 of them. I don't think any of them got into the top 10.
Aww.
And he was a good looking guy. He was exactly the sort of person that should have become a pop star and had a pleasant voice. But it's not a long-term career. It seems to be something you flirt with.
And I wonder if the rise of the TV talent show has perhaps killed it off as well, because if you've got this nexus of television and the music industry, and it's now almost totally dominated by the TV talent shows, that you're not going to be spending time as a television production company or whatever thinking, oh, well, we'll try and push a soap star, when you know you're going to get something out of X Factor or whatever the thing is, that's The Voice or whatever is coming out now.
Yeah.
Or Little Mix when they finally get round to finishing their series.
And COVID lets them. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Where you can go, great, we've got this show on for like 8 to 12 weeks and the public will get to know these person in 8 to 12 weeks. We do not need to have them on a soap for the last 5 years. And ultimately the big links to musical theatre. So a lot of the, particularly in EastEnders, a lot of them come from musical theatre. That's where they're kind of spotted. That's where they get cast. And then when they eventually leave, that's kind of where they go back. Because London, I said again, before this madness happened, London was a big space for theatre, as were many other cities. And you can get a decent touring gig in a musical, or you can get a long-running West End gig. And if you can sing and you can act, that's enough. If you can dance as well, maybe, but ultimately, musical theatre is a great skill to have, and if you're a big enough name that you'll get people in, that's all the theatre producers will kind of care about.
Fantastic. Okay, well, we'll wrap up there. I will just mention to everyone, if they want to go and look for some other peculiar things from the world of soap operas, they can find a couple of singles associated with Crossroads over the years. So Sue Nichols doing Where Will You Be, which got to number 17 in 1968, and something which I'll probably play a snippet of after I've done the closing credits for the show. It's Paul Henry, otherwise known as Benny from Crossroads, had a single out called Benny's Theme, which is one of the most distressing things I've ever heard in my life. And the man behind that, Simon May.
Oh, the king.
1978. So this has been absolutely brilliant. So thank you for bringing along this world of soaps and music for me, Shaneen. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
Everything in my life always went wrong. And then she came along. And I thought my luck was changing. Is this really happening to me, or am I dreaming? Will I wake up tomorrow and find she's still with me? And say to myself, Benny, you made it. Love has been good to you.